episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, where history proves that truth, or at least their version of it, is truly stranger than fiction. I've been looking recently into all of the different trails and themes of different doctrines and heresies and just outright weird concepts that have all merged together in what Stephen Montgomery calls the converging apostasy that led to the new apostolic reformation. And one of those themes that I've been looking at is the prosperity gospel, as many people are familiar with. But I've read so many documents, and I've read books, I've read blog articles. Wikipedia actually has a pretty good article that's laid out pretty well on the prosperity gospel. But you find this wide range of ideas of what it is and how it began, what year it began. And I wanted to talk through some of that because I believe it was in one of the comment feeds on YouTube, if I remember correctly, I mentioned the prosperity gospel, and somebody was talking about how it began with Kenneth Hagin and the Word of Faith, and then that morphed into the prosperity gospel, where Hagin is working with T.L. Osborne and others, and this thing just exploded into this health and wealth type gospel. That is partially true, but I want to go back and talk about the actual history, because like the New Apostolic Reformation, where you have all of these streams of ideas that come together into a converging apostasy, the prosperity gospel is much the same. In fact, because of the nature of the extra-biblical doctrines that have made it into today's charismatic movement, you can almost say that with each one of them. What happens is somebody will come up with some harebrained notion, and I'm going to say it like that. I'm going to outright say they're harebrained notions. Some guy has an idea, or some lady has an idea that is just slightly off the mark. It sounds biblical. They can find one or two passages that might support it, and they'll bring it in as theology and then just start expounding upon that. But you can't really expound upon that if it's not flowing through the entire Bible. So what they do is they bring on their personal revelations or their experiences, usually the experiences. And what ends up happening is they create a doctrine that is fully man-made. It does have maybe one or two passages that might support it if you really strain really hard and think about what it could potentially mean if obscured. And you come up with this idea that literally isn't biblical. In fact, I'll go so far as to say some of these ideas are anti-biblical that made it into the movements. Prosperity gospel is one of those themes. And I began studying this actually whenever I was doing my book, Militant Christian Extremism, A Critical Examination of John Alexander Dowie. Dowie amassed a massive fortune. In today's money, it's almost $500 million that he made in almost 10 years. And I started thinking through that, because if you know the history, Branhamism developed largely because of Dowieism. Branham was, his campaign manager was Gordon Lindsay, who was born in Dowie's Zion City sect. So he had definitely some Dowie influence in his raising. He was touring with John G. Lake. Lake was a Parhamite who had been in John Alexander Dowie's sect, and there's some evidence that John Lake was actually helping Dowie with some of the schemes to make money. You can find that on the internet if you just type in John G. Lake and John Alexander Dowie. But you had all of these people who were part of the movement that influenced Branham and collaborated with Branham. And Branham became the foremost leader of the post-World War II healing revival. One of the key figures that, I guess you would say he mentored Branham in the revival circuits, was F.F. Bosworth, who was a key figure in John Alexander Dowie's Zion City sect. So I was looking at it from a Zion City standpoint, and I knew that it predated John Alexander Dowie by far. And Dowie, you could not really say that Dowie preached what you call prosperity gospel today. I want to talk through that a bit. Just hold that thought. But I was looking at it from the standpoint of the way Dowie twisted it, because when you're doing a scheme like he was doing, he would enter into a city and he would have this satchel of letters and say, in this city I just came from, all of these people were healed, and here's the testimonies. And he would hold them up and he would read them. And when he first started doing it, even the newspaper reporters were tricked by the gimmick. They would go in, they would listen to it. Oh my gosh, this guy's a faith healer and he has proof. And that kind of thing made it into some of the early newspapers. But after he kept doing the trick, people caught on and said, wait a minute, why is everybody healed in the previous city and or a different country altogether? Why don't we see it here while you're saying this? And he would get mad, and then he would go to another city. You can find that. In fact, I document that pretty well in some of the newspaper articles. But it was a gimmick. That's really all it was a gimmick. It was a gimmick designed to make money. And that's really hard for people who get caught up in the movement to understand, because Dowie was one of many who have done this. Branham is one who did this. They would claim that they're not doing it for money and even hold free events. You don't have to give me anything. Just come. You're welcome. But if you know how the movement works, even back in Dowie's day, if people came and they thought they were receiving some blessing from God by being there, they're going to give their money. They've been trained to do that, basically, through tithe giving and cheerful giving in the churches. So they would come together, they would give him money, and he was getting rich. I mean, to the tune of $15 million by 1902, which again is almost $500 million in today's money. Dowie made a heck of a lot of money. And the way that he did it was very insidious. He would advertise that he had these healing homes, which were an alternative to hospitals. So it was like an alternative type of medicine. And he would tell people if they came there, they could be healed. But if they went to the hospital, they would die. And also that if you go to the hospital, you're sinning against God. So he put the fear of God, the fear of hell into the people. And basically, when you entered into these healing homes, you had to forfeit over a lot of money. I think by the end of it, it was your life savings that you had to forfeit. So he was making a lot of money. I document it well in the book, but he had money counters and people were being rejected from those healing homes if he didn't get the money or if they had less money. So this was a money scheme to begin with. Well, once he started amassing this amount of fortune and he's making big news across the entire United States and even abroad, people began to realize, wait a minute, this guy's getting rich off of us. What are we doing with this? And Dowie started saying things like, Jesus came to make his people rich. And it was really the way that he was presenting it, it was a defense of his own wealth. It wasn't really something that the people could accept. But you know how this type of movement works, right? If you have a central figure and they say something like this, everybody who's listening will say, oh, that's from Almighty God. He must mean all of us. And they all started to think this. And we've talked about it in the Revival History series, and I talk about it in the book, but in the end, people were leasing houses from him for 1,000-year leases, and the amount of money is just unbelievable when you think about it. One contemporary scholar has apparently dubbed him a religious robber baron, which is kind of funny to me, but also sad because it's kind of true. But that type of mentality long pre-existed Dowie. You had swindlers all throughout history. And you can, as far back in time as you go, as far back as the newspapers record, you can even read the accounts in the newspapers. These guys were taking people's money. And when they did, they had to have a defense of it. So what they would do is they would say things like Dowie said, Jesus came to make us rich. And they might find two or three Bible verses that they can throw in here and there and make it sound legitimate. The problem is, by and large, the people were not studied and trained enough in theology to defend the truth. That's really the problem. And that's not a problem really because of any form of deception. It's just that the people didn't have the tools to study. Like today, I can go on the internet, I can study theology pretty easily. You can go to BibleGateway.com or Bible.com, any of these websites, and you find the theology books, and you can type in a verse, and it will give you the theology. Back then, you couldn't do this, right? And you know, during Dowie's era, there were a lot of people that weren't even literate. So they had to go to a minister. The minister would say things and they would just accept it at face value. So this created a problem that I was examining from a Dowie standpoint. There are other themes that flowed from Dowie that flowed both into the movement and out of the movement. And Bosworth is a good example of this. Bosworth was one of the people who mentored William Branham in the Healing Revivals. He was a leader in Zion City. He led the Zion City Band. After John Alexander Dowie's fall and fall from grace and his death, Bosworth and his brother, F.F. Bosworth and B.B. Bosworth, they started touring through the United States in the Bosworth Brothers campaigns, and they were raking in all kinds of money. And we don't have access to their statements other than some random clips in the newspapers, but you can be assured that if people saw them wealthy, they would have to give a defense for it. And what defense do you give other than God came to make us rich? I mean, that's what a con artist does, right? A religious con artist will say these kind of things. And so what happened is that swayed the movement. And I'm laughing about the religious con artist, but the sad truth is there are people who would listen to this thing. And if they later had a ministry, they might preach it, and they might not even be a religious con artist, but they're saying the same phraseology because that's what they heard this guy who is claiming this say, right? And if you read through any of the newspaper accounts, the early years, these guys were well-dressed like movie stars. The very earliest articles you find of William Branham, they mention he's nattily dressed and he has this very expensive equipment in 1947, booming loudspeakers that you can hear all through Vandalia, Illinois. This was not your normal minister who's traveling. But the later versions, the stage persona took on and adopted this idea of this humble, poor, no money prophet. That's what I grew up with. And even the historians, you know, you read God's Generals or anything like this, they picture him as this poor guy because that was the stage persona. So what I came to understand is two things. Number one, those who were raking in the most money changed their persona to adopt the idea of being poor and present that to the people. So the people would see them, hear them, and say, oh my gosh, this guy's poor. Let's give him more money. And that was a gimmick, right? That's what Branham did. Some of the others did this. Bosworth, from the early years, you can read through the newspapers. He, too, is very well-dressed. The newspaper reporters really note this because there were many traveling ministers back during that day. The old circuit rider preachers, and they were riding in old buckskin, you know, on the back of horses. They might be wearing dirty, muddy clothes, etc. And they would go preach to a town. Well, then suddenly you got this guy who's coming in a fancy suit that looks like a banker. You're going to notice it. And the newspaper articles did. I've read through, for this book alone, I bet I read through, I don't know, 50,000 newspapers, probably more. There are hundreds and hundreds of thousands in the archives that you can read about Dowie. So I was looking at it from a Dowie standpoint simply because Dowie was the prototype for what Branham created, and eventually the NAR would adopt many themes. You can go back to Dowie for things like dominionism. Dowie wanted to take control of the United States. In fact, he created his own political party. They went to Washington. He even created an army. So if you think Joel's army, you know, some of the premise for Latter Rain, Manifest Sons of God, he wasn't teaching Manifest Sons of God in the same way, I don't think. But the idea of creating an army for a militant takeover of the United States and abroad, Dowie was the prototype. He did this. There are newspaper accounts, and I think even some of Dowie's own writings, where his biggest failure in his entire history in the United States was sending somewhere in the neighborhood of 6,000 converts to New York City, claiming that he had either had a vision or some revelation from God that he was going to conquer New York City and claim it, like he had Chicago. And they went door to door knocking, trying to convert the New York City people. Held big revivals in Carnegie Hall, and in the end, they literally ran him out of New York City. It did not work at all. So it was one of his biggest failures, and biggest financial losses. It's really a big deal that happened. But he wanted to take over. He wanted to forcibly convert the nation. And that's when you think New Apostolic Reformation, forcibly converting the nation as they're trying to do now. That's what Dowie was doing. So that's why I went to Dowie first. And again, I was looking for a connection to Branhamism, not so much prosperity gospel, but I started thinking about the concepts. When I heard Dowie say things like Jesus came to make us rich, I started to put myself in the mind of a con artist to think, okay, what would I tell people if I come, you know, begging for their money and claiming I need it, I don't have any money, but then suddenly the newspapers broadcast that I've got tens of millions of dollars, or in his case, $500 million in today's money, what would I say to the people? Of course, I'm going to tell them that God does this for you. That's how prosperity works, the prosperity scheme. So there are obviously some Bible passages that talk about God blessing you. And if you're a Pentecostal, in the way that the Pentecostals generally put people back under the old covenant law, which is another odd thing for another day. I won't go there, but there are blessings to Israel that get applied today. They do that largely through British Israelism, the idea that the United States and Canada are descendants of the lost 10 tribes of Israel, and that every blessing to Israel is actually a blessing to us today, my brothers and sisters. Come give us your money and God will bless you. That's how all of this works, and it's really sad when you think about it. So anyway, I went down the Dowie path, and I've talked about that quite a bit in a few podcasts because it is a legitimate stream that flows from Dowie into Latter Rain, into Prosperity Gospel, finally into New Apostolic Reformation. Not just Prosperity Gospel, but other streams as well. Dowie was the prototype for a lot of them. But Dowie was just one of many people. There are other people that you can look at as flows of information and doctrine that come into what eventually birthed what is called the Prosperity Gospel. And if you go to Wikipedia, Wikipedia actually has a pretty good article that lays most of it out. And in the history section, they list it as the late 19th and early 20th century as a background. There are ideas that come together, such as the charismatic presentation, the new thought presentation, the gospel of pragmatism, individualism, upward mobility. This American gospel was exemplified by Andrew Carnegie's Gospel of Wealth and Russell Conwell's famous sermon, Acres of Diamonds. That's straight from Wikipedia. And I should pause there just a second for people who are learning how to research. I don't think I've ever said this before, but when you read Wikipedia, you need to read it with a grain of salt. It doesn't mean that it's absolute true, like a lot of people believe. Wikipedia is crowdsourced, which means I can write in Wikipedia, you can write in Wikipedia, anybody who has knowledge or not can write in Wikipedia, and it's all cleansed by moderation if there are moderators. So you might find articles that just have incorrect information. And if something's posted and has not yet been moderated, you might read something that's actually incorrect that will be later removed from Wikipedia. So read it with a grain of salt. But what I do whenever I'm researching, I'll go through Wikipedia and you'll see the bracketed numbers by each section. You can click on that and it'll take you into a book or a news article, newspaper article. That's what I use whenever I'm doing my research. With that, you could take a book name, for example, and go to Google Books and type in the name. Sometimes you can read it or at least read sections of it. Other times you could take it to archive.org. Sometimes we'll have the entire book. But there are different places you can go if you get the source of what is being stated. And that's the power of Wikipedia. Somebody will post a comment with some information and here's a place to go look. Well, you can go look and you can gather really, really good information. So that's my disclaimer about Wikipedia. But with regards to the Prosperity Gospel, the article, at least in its current form as I'm speaking at this moment and have it on my screen at this moment, it is pretty solid. And it may change. It may change by the time this podcast is published, but it is pretty solid. And it lists various different streams of people and thought that come into it. E.W. Kenyon is one of the people mentioned, for example. E.W. Kenyon was a Baptist minister, and he was part of the Higher Life movement, which really, really influenced Pentecostalism. When you think Higher Life and you think of being born again in Pentecostalism or the second blessing of Pentecostalism, those theologies really tie together hand in hand. They are different, but they came together in various ways, and you can read that in the Pentecostal section, I believe. But E.W. Kenyon was a strong driving force for bringing in new thought into the movement, and the new thought included different various aspects of the prosperity movement, prosperity gospel. And F.F. Bosworth, who I mentioned was a leader in John Alexander Dowie's Zion sect, was a study of E.W. Kenyon, and he even mentions this in his book, Christ the Healer, which is widely distributed among the faith healing converts. So Bosworth was preaching Kenyon, which likely means that Dowie was either studying him or at least knew of his existence and spoke favorably of him. Bosworth adopted it. Bosworth started taking those ideas, and those ideas went into the latter rain revivals through Bosworth. So when you hear people like Kenneth Hagin, sounds very much like E.W. Kenyon, there's a reason for that. It's because the movement, not just Bosworth, but the movement had adopted many themes that Kenyon had presented. One of those themes was the prosperity gospel. If you keep reading in the Wikipedia section, you'll find all the way down to where it's talking about the post-1945 healing revivals, and it mentions that this idea of prosperity had entered into the revivals. One of the things that the Wikipedia article gets pretty accurate in this section, it says, in fact, early Pentecostals tended to view prosperity as a threat to a person's spiritual well-being, but by the 1940s and 1950s, a recognizable form of the doctrine began to take shape within the Pentecostal movement through the teachings of deliverance and healing evangelists. And that is absolutely correct. What's interesting about it is if you came from and escaped from any of the cults that emerge from this latter rain revival system, most of the cult leaders will claim that they're not into money, that they're not doing it for the money. There are a few, obviously, like, you know, T.L. Osborne was saying, give me your money. Oral Roberts would say it's a seed faith. Plant a seed of money by giving it to me, and God will bless you in return. So you had this strange development that over time it turned into something that's just chaotic. But in its early form, the Pentecostals kind of frowned on the idea of money, while the Pentecostal revivalists were trying to copy exactly what Dowie did and build an empire just like his. So they wanted money, but they would say it in ways that would make people think that they didn't want money, so that people would give them money. It's this weird circle. And in Branham's style, he would claim to be this, you know, Kentucky bumpkin that really had no money, and people would feel sorry for him and give him money, not knowing that none of that life story was true. Absolutely not any part of it. We've documented that pretty well in the Revival History series, but Branham grew up in a casino town of Jeffersonville, which was called Little Las Vegas. And all the stories of him being raised hunting, fishing, trapping in the middle of Kentucky, none of it's true. And we have the government records to back that up. But think about the early years as this thing was being developed. So I've talked Dowie and his massive riches, and I've talked about E.W. Kenyon's influence. Once that came into the revival streams and people started to see there's some power in this, we can make a lot of money by doing it, it started to take different shapes and forms. One of the shapes and forms that Branham introduced into the revival, which he probably copied from somebody else, that's how Branham worked, but he started referring back to the Elijah-Elisha ministry. And he would go to the passage that in the Bible that says, ask what you will and I'll give to you. And he would say things like, this is a perfect type of the church. And he said, I want a double portion of your spirit. And this is where it began to take shape. He would say, Don't be afraid to ask. Ask abundantly. You have not because you ask not. And you ask not because you believe not. And what he's saying is that the prosperity in the forms of whatever you ask for will come by faith. And if you think of Oral Roberts developing the seed faith, think of where he got that from. He got it from the idea that faith is the substance that produces your prosperity. Branham had countless sermons that, you know, he would say faith is an actual substance. It's not something that you actively believe and do. It's a substance. That's the way he misquoted or misunderstood what the Bible said when it says faith is a substance. And people adopted that idea and they started linking it to prosperity because he was doing the same thing. And what happens is, like I said, somebody will take an idea and just twist it a little bit, make it slightly off, and people will build doctrines upon it. And you never know where it goes. It's like a train track going down the rails, and suddenly you pull the rails away. Well, that thing's still barreling down. You don't know where it's going to go, but it's going somewhere. And in this case, it went to, let's plant a seed of money by giving me your money, and you'll get your money in return. And I want to pause there because Branham's example is actually a pretty good example of how the movement would take a verse here, a verse there, and make like a witch's brew of verses to come up with a harebrained doctrine. Branham is mentioning James 4:2, you have not because you ask not, but he's only taken that one little blurb from that one sentence in James 4:2. It's not the entire context. Then he also references, and he's referencing Elisha and Elijah when he's talking about double portion. That's from 2 Kings 2:9, I believe it is. But the double portion idea actually was part of the Mosaic law. In Deuteronomy, it talks about the right of the firstborn, because under the law of Moses, the firstborn son was entitled to a double portion of his father's inheritance. And so there are all of these ideas and themes that come together to make this concoction of doctrine. It wasn't in the form that we think of today when we think prosperity gospel, but back then it was in a form that was just twisted enough where people would actually give them boxes and suitcases of money. We've documented that pretty well. Branham, while claiming to be not taking an offering his entire ministry, is having two hefty men carry the boxes of money from his early revivals in, I think it's the year 1947, that newspaper article is mentioned. So people were definitely planting the seed faith, as Oral Roberts would call it. But in the early versions of this, there wasn't the idea in the doctrine so much that you present me your money and God will give you your money back in a double portion. It was just simply have faith, according to Branham's version of it, have faith and you'll get your money. And people started associating that faith with giving. And that's really how this developed. Once that link was made, then the ministers just ran with it. Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started? Or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. I've mentioned this a few times in various places, but when Avok Hagopian, the Armenian faith healer, came into the United States and swept the nation by storm, creating such a ruckus, he changed the face of American Christianity forever. And yes, not everybody in American Christianity adopted what he had to say or did anything similar, remotely similar. But if you look at the chain of events that happened after his arrival, the people here he is connected to, the people he toured with, and watch what developed from it, this made a mess that was never, ever cleaned up. He landed in arguably one of the most wealthy parts of the United States, in Palm Springs, coming to heal a very disabled and very ill son of a wealthy business owner in Palm Springs. But he was connected to wealthy families there, including the Kardashian family and the Shakarian family. Those two names would become a big part of my research later, because the Kardashian family, working with the Shakarian family, would eventually sponsor AVOC, and from that sponsorship would develop the Full Gospel Businessmen's Fellowship International. This is a big, big deal. The money flowing through that organization, its sole purpose is to combine businessmen who can donate to religious operations. It is it's a money vehicle. That's really what it is. And yes, they advertise that they do good work with the money, etc., but it literally was a vehicle to connect business owners to religious leaders. That was what this was intended for. And this all came to be around 1947. That is the same year that Oral Roberts, who is also working with Branham and others in the Voice of Healing campaigns, to bring the prosperity theology. In 1947, Oral Roberts began expounding, I guess, upon what Branham taught, that the laws of faith was a blessing pact in which God would return donations, I think he said sevenfold. And so Branham's faith as a substance, the theme that Branham's revivals always began with, turned into faith is a substance that can produce sevenfold return on your investment. And this investment idea, again, comes right after the connection to these prominent businessmen. You can see how all of these streams come together, some of them not even really religious, if you stop and think about it. Now, the Kardashian family were religious. They were Pentecostals, and I think even the patriarch had attended Azusa Street, if I remember correctly. So they were connected to the religious community, but by and large, all of these wealthy landowners and vineyard owners in Palm Springs, they weren't there just simply for the religion. They saw the power of what happened when AVOC attracted people from all across the United States into Palm Springs. Palm Springs literally could not hold the volume of people that came there. There wasn't enough food to even feed them, and people were at risk of dying because of AVOC's arrival and the news media's coverage of it. So they had to set up like hot dog stands, and the bars, I think, were opening to people. Homes were opening to people. They were trying to help people survive. They saw the power of this and realized that there is a good potential to make money here. And I'm not saying that they had insidious thoughts about the money, but they saw that there was a means to connect money to evangelists, and then the evangelists could then in turn go and tour throughout the United States. So they saw this as an opportunity to generate evangelists. That's probably the best way to say it. When you combine that with the Voice of Healing movement, it was taking off at about the same time. The Voice of Healing magazine, I think 1948 was its first issue. They had the vehicle to advertise all of these evangelists, but how do you fund them? That's really where the problem came in. And yes, Full Gospel Businessman, the official organization, was developed much later, but the theme emerged right about the time that AVOC came into the United States. So for me, this is just one stream that's coming into the prosperity gospel, these wealthy businessmen. And one of the families is the Kardashian family, which is kind of funny if you know the Kardashian family, who they are today. So you have these streams of ideas coming together, evolving into what would later develop into the Seed Faith, Give Me Your Money. But it began about 1947 when AVOC is here. If you go to the pictures, and I'll pull one up if you're on the YouTube feed of this podcast. If you go to the pictures and you look at the men who are with AVOC, here's one with Branham in it and Branham's campaign manager. These guys are what the newspapers described as Natalie dressed. They look like movie stars in this photograph. Branham is one who later, if you look at any of his photographs that's advertised by his cult of personality, he's wearing these cheap suits. He's sometimes he's in bib overalls. They present him as this poor guy who has no money. But that wasn't the case from the beginning. They were coming into a lot of money. What's really interesting is that if you fast forward to about 1953, there is this weird rift that is emerging between all of the various people who are involved in these ministries. This is a movement that was generating faith healers. That's what this vehicle, Voice of Healing magazine, did. It advertised all of these people who are God's best gift to the earth, basically. What do you do whenever you have two God's gifts that is the best thing that hit the earth? Well, they start competing. Because of the American, the American philosophy, you're going to have competition. And because the ministries were ran like businesses, you had competing businesses. And so what happened is the heads of those businesses, which was A.A. Allen, Oral Roberts, William Branham, T.L. Osborne, all of these guys that are involved in the same movement, they all started to flex their muscles, I guess you'd say, and try to see who can get on the top of the mountain. That's what was happening, really. Oral Roberts began his prosperity gospel, as Wikipedia even mentions, 1947. But you had people like A.A. Allen, who published The Secret to Scriptural Financial Success and started promoting all of his merchandise as these miracle tent shavings and weird things that he had, prayer cloths anointed with miracle oil. You could sell things in these revivals and make money. So it was like your revival was much more than just simply going and listening to a minister. You could see their storefronts right there on the tables. William Branham mentions those tables often. He would say the tape boys have the tapes out on the tables. Well, these guys were selling the recordings of different various revivals. So these guys had a storefront. They had a tent. They literally had a traveling, bonanza of different things that you could spend your money on. And they were starting to make a lot of money. The interesting part about all of this is around 1953, when it came to a head, they started fighting with each other, and a lot of them began to push Branham out. There are some evidence of that we talked through in the Revival History series. I have some on the website, in fact, but even Gordon Lindsay started snubbing William Branham, and Branham decided to go try his own thing for a while. He started working with Joseph Matson Boze, and that's whenever they bring Jim Jones into the picture, all because of this rift that is starting to emerge. And Branham and Allen were competing head-to-head, which is kind of funny when you take a step back and think about it. When T.L. Osborne started to push the prosperity notion, Oral Roberts, who is well known for his prosperity gospel, and William Branham, they began to criticize the other prosperity ministries, which is really kind of funny. What was happening, if you think about the competing businesses, it's odd because if you think of, competing businesses. So you got Kroger and you've got Walmart, and both of them sell groceries. Well, people will go to Kroger's for the cheapest deal in certain foods and go to Walmart for the cheapest deal in other foods. Or if you're in a small rural area, you may only have a Kroger and that's your customer base. You may only have a Walmart in another city. That's your customer base. You have divided sections of customers is what I'm trying to get at. But in these revival pools, you had competing businesses for the same exact customer base because they're going through the same towns. They went on the same revival circuits. And so you'd have a minister come in and just, make the last guy sound like a scoundrel. This guy's out to get your money. Give me your money instead. And then the next would come through and he would say the same thing. So the rift that was happening is a little bit odd because Oral Roberts went on to found Oral Roberts University, and he actually became far greater than Branham ever thought about becoming. But it was in that time Branham started to, I don't know if he pushed the idea or somebody came up with the idea, but his Elijah ministry, his Manifested Sons of God theology, emerged such that he was the manifestation of Jesus. And T.L. Osborne is one who was adopting that. In fact, at William Branham's memorial service, I've mentioned this a few times, T.L. Osborne actually said, I'm going to be sacrilegious by saying this, but Branham was God in the flesh, and I'm paraphrasing greatly. He was one that was siding with Branham while others were siding with Oral Roberts. And so you had this rift that is beginning to emerge. And so because of that rift, it gets odd. Osborne later came back because Branham died, and now Osborne is recognized in the prosperity gospel. Branham died, but before he died, as the rift began to grow greater and greater, you find him speaking very strongly against things like he had earlier said, your faith, just ask abundantly, you'll receive abundantly. People do not realize that Branham taught that in the early years, because in the later years, he is denouncing it. And all of the historians and most of his following will say he was so strongly against the prosperity gospel. He did not like it. He preached against it. He was vehemently against it, they'll say. And that is true, but you have to look at the time period. Go back to the early years when he's saying, all you have to do is ask and you'll get it. The faith is the substance. You can believe it. You too have the power. Give me your money. That's really what this came out to be. I've mentioned this in a few podcasts as well, but the difference between Branham's early persona and his later persona is so significantly different that people are shocked whenever they hear the recording of William Branham. He's touring with Franklin Hall. Those two were basically the catalyst for Latter Rain. And Franklin Hall says, what are you going to start with, William Branham? And William Branham starts to stutter. And Franklin Hall says, some money, right? You're going to start with some money. And Branham sheepishly says, yes. Back during the early years, when this was beginning, it was about the money. In the later years, as the prosperity gospel took off and you had all of these competing prosperity gospel people, you had this rift. You had those that were speaking against it, even though they had helped create it, and you had those that are just adopting it and going forward. The interesting part of that is the ones who did adopt it and went forward with it, because so much money flowed through it, that it became this powerhouse that it was just literally an unstoppable force. So Oral Roberts rose into this prominence that Branham never achieved simply because of the money. He had the money to back everything that he did. And that's why we have Oral Roberts University. In the late 1950s, as all of these factions are competing for power and control and money over the organizations, things got a little bit odd. Voice of Healing, the magazine, which was literally created to promote William Branham's ministry from its very inception, it was Branham's magazine. Gordon Lindsay had taken over as editor, and he fully took control of it. And for years, he was in control until 1958. He decides he's going to change the name of it. And the name of Voice of Healing magazine, for a brief period of time, became Worldwide Revival. This is really a key fact that I think a lot of historians overlook, because if you look at the cover photo, and I'll pull it up if you're on the YouTube feed, the cover photo, very ironically, doesn't have Branham in it. And it says, with the completion of 10 years of ministry, the Voice of Healing magazine now becomes Worldwide Revival, in accord with the enlarged scope of worldwide evangelism. So these ministers were vowing for control. There was these factions developing. Branham was on one side of the faction. He decides he's going to build his ministry with other people, including Jim Jones, of all people. He's going one direction. These other guys are going this other direction. And you have people who are developing the prosperity gospel, people who are condemning it, who also helped create it, which is an odd thing to say and think through. But you had these factions, and they tried it without Branham. This is the weird thing, because Worldwide Revival is a name most people are unfamiliar with. And if somebody goes to the Voice of Healing magazine archives, they'll skim through them and they'll say, what is this? Why did they change their name for a brief period of time? It's because of these factions that were emerging. You can see Branham is not present in the photograph. And then later, the name changes back. What happened was the ministries tried to deviate and shift away from Branham, because Branham was being sanctioned by so many churches. Like the Assemblies of God, for example, had condemned Latter Rain in 1949. And they, from all appearances, had separated themselves from it. And the Assemblies had split in half. The Independent Assemblies of God, the main trunk of the Assemblies of God, the Independent were supportive of Branham. The main trunk was supposed to be not supportive, But within the Assemblies of God, you also had factions. You had factions of people within the Assemblies of God who openly declared that Branham and the Revivals were a movement by God, and other factions within the Assemblies that didn't. Well, among all of this mess, Gordon Lindsay thinks, this is my moment, I'm going to go, and this would eventually evolve into what became Christ for the Nations. But while Branham was alive, he attempted it, and it was a miserable failure. And so later on, you'll find the magazine was renamed again back to The Voice of Healing until Branham's death. This thing was largely an attempt at separating from Branham that did not work. In August of 1959, the magazine was changed back to the name Voice of Healing, and I'll pull it up on the screen. You can see it as well, but underneath the Voice of Healing, it says the Magazine of Deliverance and Worldwide Revival. So they basically shifted gears back, and you'll find Branham is advertised in the magazines quite a few times after 1959. So they attempted it. It didn't work, but that didn't stop the prosperity gospel. It was moving ahead in such steam and such power that there was no way really to stop it. By the 1960s, you had the televangelism was coming to prominence. No longer was it just simply the radio. You had all sorts of religious programming in the United States, and Oral Roberts was one of the first to develop a syndicated weekly program that it became one of the most watched religious shows in the United States. And it eventually, what happened was, where the tent revivalists had fame because of their revival circuits and touring, now the televangelists, they could reach a much broader audience and have more people following and donating. And so they became richer and richer and richer. And many people who probably would have denounced it from the beginning, they have to explain how we get all this money. How did I become rich? Well, it's because God gave it to me, because you planted the seed. That's really what this was. The prosperity gospel, in my opinion, it only exists because of the people who needed a way to explain why God allows them to make all of this money while all of these people giving it to them are poor. That's really, in my opinion, that is the only reason the prosperity gospel exists. I know there are people who are defendant. There'll be people in the comment feeds of whatever platform you're watching or listening to this on who will say, no, this Bible verse says this. But if you read the rest of it in context, there's nothing that says you're going to have an elite supreme leader who you'll plant your money to, and that money will grow like a tree and come back to you in sevenfold. That just does not exist in the Bible. But that's what these guys were doing. Now, I said at the beginning, there were people who mentioned the word of faith, and I do want to mention that connection because it is important. When you think word of faith, you think Kenneth Hagin. And there's this photograph, which I'll put it up on the screen if you're watching this, but you got people like Kenneth Hagin, T.L. Osborne, others who are both prosperity gospel and word of faith, and they see this as a transition. In other words, let's say word of faith came first, and from that developed prosperity gospel. It's kind of true, because the prosperity gospel did adopt some ideas from word of faith, but both existed and pre-existed the latter rain at the same time. Kenneth Hagin's teaching word of faith was nothing new. Branham was teaching the spoken word, which was the same thing. They're just different ways to say the same thing. Branham would say, you speak it and you believe it and it will come true. Kenneth Hagin will say, you have a word of faith and you believe it and it will come true. It is the same exact doctrine. Two different names, two different brandings, because it's two different competing businesses producing the same product to the same customer. We have to have two different marketing schemes. That's really what it all boils down to. But Kenneth Hagin became the big name of this. Branham died, and everything literally was unlocked. When Branham died, every restriction that all of the ministers had to tailor to Branham so that they could be in prominence while he was so widely adopted by the Pentecostal communities, that bond was broken. 1965, the doors were open, the floodgates were open, everybody started going forward with, how can we make more money? Because now Branham's out of the picture, and every one of his customers can now be our customers. That's what happened. That's literally what happened. So you have all of these ministries rising up after Branham, and it's like, when I say the floodgates open, I mean literally you can't find trails often between some of the charismatics and Branhamism, because the floodgates had opened so wide, it was attracting people who weren't even in the movement, who found that this, there's a lot of money flowing through this. There's a good way to make money. And you also had, like I said, the vehicles, like the full gospel businessmen, they were tailoring to all kinds of crowds of business-minded people who could fund organizations. And so they were actually reaching outside of the normal circles that Branhamism and some of the Branham affiliates were reaching to. In other words, they were finding additional customer bases. So when you think of a corporate business strategy, the CEO was the Kenneth Hagins, the T.L. Osbornes, Oral Roberts, but his team of marketing included, I guess you would call them, you know, contract agencies, and the Full Gospel Businessmen's Fellowship International would be a contract agency. You can go find me the funding. Now I'm going to have my CEO adopt the funding and go target a different customer audience. That's what this boils down to. By the late 2000s, after the floodgates had opened, this turned into tidal waves. Not just one tidal wave, but multiple tidal waves. There's an estimated tens of millions of Christians that had adopted the prosperity gospel by the late 2000s. And you had this new breed of Pentecostal movement that was so accepting of the prosperity gospel that they were giving money in ways that they never could give before. And you had all of these different platforms for giving. And I mean, if you fast forward that to today, think about it. You can take your phone and you could snap a QR code and you can send money just with a QR code. So as this evolves over time, the business structure for giving has evolved immensely. And those who are accepting the money, the ways to accept the money, move the money, store the money, spend the money, all of that is also growing and turning very, very deceptive, in my opinion. We do have some accountability that is happening because of different journalists who dig into the different ministries. But the ones that are the most insidious, there are some within the ministries who will maintain the presence, even dress, as though they don't have a lot of money. And you find out after they die, they've got a massive amount of money stored up. And it's all because this was a fine-tailored art. This was something that maybe not all of them had ill intent, but over time, as they watched how it worked, they learned how the business worked. And so the prosperity gospel, the faith healing, all of these things, if you look at it at its core foundation, it was nothing more than a business, a means to make money. And if you go back to people like John Alexander Dowie, it was a business that originated from a scam. So in my opinion, if people ask me, do you believe the prosperity gospel is a true gospel? Or they'll ask me, do I believe the Bible even supports it? Things like this. I just simply respond, well, read it. If you read it in context, you won't find any of the things that they do in the Bible. You have to go outside of the Bible and you have to go to personal revelation, which is why you have names like Rhema and spoken word. I had this revelation, and the revelation is that you will give me your money. So if I could advocate for anything in this podcast, I would say, don't give them your money. It's not a good idea. It's just really not a good idea. So if you've enjoyed the show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.